Welcome to Mobility Now, the podcast that looks at mobility technology sitting at the edge of today but the center of tomorrow. I'm your host, Amit Mehta, Head of Innovation at Silicon Valley Lab, an advanced research division of North American Lighting, a subsidiary of the Koito Group, the world's leading Tier 1 supplier of exterior automotive lighting.
And I'm your co-host, Dan Davies, Innovation Manager at Silicon Valley Lab. Autonomous vehicles and other mobility technologies really have the potential to reduce road fatalities, reduce congestion, and just change the way we experience traveling. Mobility Now interviews key players from startups and industry leaders who are developing these mobility strategies.
Mobility Now is for people new to the industry, students wanting to enter the industry, and others in the industry that would like to keep up on trends surrounding mobility. So, Dan, how's life in San Francisco? Is everything still shut down? And are you seeing delivery robots deliver everyone's food and groceries everywhere you look?
Definitely a huge uptick in the delivery robots. I think I almost stepped on a couple out there in Berkeley, you know, the sidewalk robots. But there's been a lot of the DoorDash and those kinds of delivery services driving around. Seen a lot of those. Although none of them automated yet. They're always done by a human driver.
I see.
So we'll see when the actual autonomous deliveries start.
Okay. Interesting.
During the CES, the keynote speech, last week, CES was really a lot of fun, by the way. I saw during the GM's keynote speech that they were pivoting to use their crews autonomous vehicle to start delivering food during COVID-19. I've seen a lot of cruise vehicles around the city, but I haven't seen them actually do the deliveries, but it seems like that's something that they're doing. They also have plans to start fully autonomous driving. Haven't seen that yet either, but they're starting that in San Francisco. But they're also announcing a flying Cadillac. So I look forward to getting my food delivered by those vehicles someday in the future.
That's incredible. I'm looking forward to seeing that. So what I'm understanding is you won't have to leave your house. You would just open your window and this giant machine would deliver your Chinese or Japanese food straight to you.
I guess that's how it works, right? Yeah, you open your window and the drone flies in and drops off your food.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting for the future. You know, some of the other CES trends I saw is quite interesting is a lot of COVID tech, which I think you would expect, right? You just expect what's happening to stay clean and sanitary to make sure you don't contract the virus. Also, a lot around 5G. I know there's not really that many dedicated zones for 5G today, but I'm sure we're going to see more and more as we get these high-end cell phones and people have to end their product life cycle and buy a new phone that has the 5G hardware that's capable to have your web page load in a blink of an eye.
Yep.
Another one is health. I saw a lot of companies talk about health, and it's not just health going into the doctor and seeing the doctor. It's more about health of actually seeing the doctor on a telemedicine type platform like Teladoc or a Zoom platform. Mm-hmm. And a couple other things was working from home and learning from home. Working from home is, of course, here to stay, I think, at least a hybrid form. We're not going to go into the office every single day because, we're actually very productive. At least I think we are. And learning from home, that's a new trend that's really picking up. Parents aren't really comfortable with having their kids go to school, come back. Not only could they contract the virus, but also the parents could contract the virus. So I think learning from home is going to be a trend that stays for a long time. And finally, mobility. I saw a lot around mobility, especially what I was impressed with was Mercedes, their 56-inch screen, the cluster, all the information on this one cluster just linked together. It was quite incredible. I thought CES was terrific this year, but what else did you see at CES, and what do you think we could expect as trends for the next 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, I saw that big screen. That was really cool. Definitely interesting stuff in the vehicle tech space, which is a growing field at CES. Every year it seems to be bigger than the last. I think the larger categories this year was AI. I think we saw a lot of growth in just the number of exhibitors doing artificial intelligence, a lot of voice recognition, image recognition, AI assistance. There's a lot of products in that space. And the biggest category was actually sensors. There are a lot of new sensors, really for everything. I saw environmental sensors that can measure the quality of the air, gases in the atmosphere. Of course, those sensors for vehicles, that's one of the biggest markets for sensors. And an interesting thing that I noticed was last year we saw a big emphasis on LiDAR. A lot of companies showing off their automotive LiDAR, right? Even some of the larger companies like Hitachi, Analog Devices, you know, established companies developing their own LiDAR. So it's not just startups that were doing it.
Yep, it's a big market.
Yeah. This year, of course, we saw that again, but we saw a lot of newer sensors too. I think the variety of sensors that we're using on vehicles is starting to branch out beyond LiDAR. This year, there were a lot of cameras and 3D cameras for vehicle applications. So that was an interesting growing field to see at CES.
So what are some of the interesting companies that you thought could play in this space?
You mean in terms of the manufacturers of those cameras?
Yeah, you said a lot about 3D cameras and how they could be used for mobility especially. So I'm wondering what you saw.
Absolutely. Well, you had a great session on it with three of the prominent sensor manufacturers in this space. You had LiDAR and radar. But the really cool one that I thought you had was the camera company called Nodar.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You had a nice session exploring the different types of sensors and how they can be used together to augment the sensing of the vehicle. There was also a really interesting TechCrunch article that I read. I think the title was Startups Look Beyond LiDAR for Autonomous Vehicle Perception.
Right.
And it was about how other sensors besides LiDAR can help vehicles. And 3D cameras was one of them that they focused on. And Nodar was actually mentioned in that article as well.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Nodar because we have a special guest in store for you today. I'd like to introduce our guest today. It's Brad Rosen. He is the CEO and co-founder of Nodar. Brad is actually a serial entrepreneur, having been involved in 7 venture-backed startups and several exits. Brad has a technical background, which includes electrical and computer engineering, and an MBA from MIT. At Nodar, Brad really looks after all the non-technical activities such as sales, business development, marketing, HR, basically everything other than the science and product development. So he really leaves the hard work to his co-founder, Leif. How are you doing today, Brad?
I'm great. And I'd like to make one correction just right out of the gate. I'm the COO and not the CEO.
Ah, did I say CEO? I apologize.
Maybe I heard CEO. Anyway.
I think I promoted you too early. I'm sorry, Brad.
That's okay. I deserve it.
Okay. I apologize. We don't want to get Leif too angry after hearing this.
No. Nice to meet you, guys.
I'm really glad you could join us today, Brad. I think we have a very good podcast in store because your technology is revolutionary and game-changing. But before we get into the technology, I really want to understand how you got involved in Nodar.
Sure. So I have a technical background, and I've always been fascinated with the newer technologies. As you said, an electrical engineering and computer engineering degree. And I've been part of lots of different tech startups, all of which have been venture-backed and exited in some way, shape, or form. And two of them specifically were related to sensors. One was called Cognio, which we sold to Cisco. And that was sensing the wireless spectrum for various forms of recognizable interference. And another project was called Midas, and it was at MIT in the Deshpande Center, where we were researching the uses of IR sensors in automotive. And so, you know, this is a theme for me. And about 2 years ago now, I sold my last company, and I was looking around at new things to do. And through the venture community here in Boston, I was introduced to my co-founder, now Leif. And I had been looking at, the autonomous vehicle market, not only limited to terrestrial applications, but also I was really fascinated with air, UAVs and drone applications and these types of things. And one common theme I found was that they all require vision systems. And so, you know, that was something I was looking closely at when I met Leif. Leif, you can look up his background, but, you know, he's like an MIT lifer, you know, spent undergraduate and master's and PhD at MIT doing optoelectronics stuff. And then he built LIDARs for 13 years at Lincoln Labs. So there aren't that many people more about LIDAR and optoelectronics than Leif. And, you know, this kind of leads into, you know, why we're here. But Leif basically had come up with an alternate way of getting high density point clouds out of standard cameras, and felt that was more viable for the mainstream markets than laser based or active sensing systems.
That's funny, because I remember during the roundtable discussion, he said his final comment was, well, you can't beat millions of pixels. And we can argue with that.
It's so true. It's like, it's actually truly unbelievable what you know, the standard CMOS cameras can do today. Just the throughput is, and the, you know, the sensitivity is unbelievable.
Yeah, really great. You know, we've had cameras on vehicles for quite a while now, decades, really. And now you're working on something new, which is exciting to see. I saw your newest product on your website, Hammerhead. Can you talk a little bit about that? Why is it called Hammerhead?
Sure. Our newest and first, I will note. Our thing is, for the first time, stereo vision's been around since, I think, the 30s, right? And that's the notion of using, you know, leveraging the disparity between two cameras, the disparity meaning the shift. Like if you close one eye, then close the other eye, you'll notice a shift in the scene that your brain sees. And so the range or the distance and the accuracy with which you can kind of perceive depth is directly related to the distance between the cameras. So our thing at Nodar is that we've figured out a way to separate the cameras and make them very wide. And the thing about the Hammerhead Shark, which is so interesting and we recently learned, is that it has the widest range or distance between its eyes of any animal in the animal kingdom.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, isn't that so cool? And you look at the things and they're like, it's just an amazing that they even evolved. Like, those eyes are so far out there. They're probably a meter in separation. And that gives them incredible depth perception, which really helps a shark who's hunting in a featureless ocean, you know, and can't really rely on, you know, you and I, we rely on things like shading and sort of inferencing, I'll call it, like, oh, I know that's a car, so I know roughly how large it is, and therefore I can deduce the distance to it. That's tough in the ocean, right? Because there's not a lot of that going on. So the Hammerhead has a huge advantage with this wide stance, if you will, of their eyes. And that's kind of what we are enabling.
Wow, that's quite interesting.
So cool. Yeah.
I think this is very useful technology, the way you've described it and how you're taking basically what a Hammerhead has and bringing it to vehicles. But I'd like to understand more about why isn't this technology on all cars right now?
Right. So the thing about binocular or stereoscopic vision is that the cameras need to be, you know, they need to know the stance of each other within a tiny, you know, percentage of a degree, right? And any sort of movement can put them out of calibration and ruin the distance measurement. So historically, you know, there are stereo sensors that have been used in vehicles, notably the Subaru, which was made originally by Hitachi, that stereo vision system. And, you know, these systems, the cameras were placed very close to one another, and they were bound by a rigid stiffener or beam in order to keep the relative pose of the cameras aligned. And the problem with that is that the cameras were so close together, the range or the depth perception was extremely limited, maybe to 50 meters or so. For truly autonomous vehicles, we need to be able to see literally hundreds of meters, and we need to be able to do it with precision, you know? So those systems were extremely limited. What Leaf did is he basically said, let's get rid of that beam or stiffener. Let's allow these cameras to kind of move independently, be mounted independently in unique locations, and let's do the compensation in software. And so that's calibration and pose alignment and, you know, compensating for very fast vibrations like the engine vibration or road noise, and slow vibrations, which could be like the change in temperature kind of makes metals kind of bend over time or move over time. So we're compensating for all of that stuff.
Very interesting. So it sounds like the stereo vision technology has been around, but tolerances has been a problem, right? Especially when we're manufacturing a million vehicles a year, some of the high volume models. Getting the cameras in the same place every time you build a car, yeah. To get that range accuracy, that's been the problem that Nodar has solved through calibration.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's the notion of, yes, calibrating the cameras, but also allowing the distance between the cameras to be extended. So you can imagine, and this dovetails nicely into some of the stuff Koito is doing, but you can imagine the cameras being placed, say, in the rearview mirrors or in the headlights or on the roof. And in doing so, you now have extended the range of this 3D vision system to literally 1,000 meters in some cases. And that's a game changer because obviously the cost of these cameras is several orders of magnitude cheaper than a LiDAR system or a laser-based system.
That's incredible. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. You mentioned something very interesting there, the integration into headlights. That's something we at Koito have been working on, integrating sensors that support autonomous driving into the two headlights for a lot of reasons. First of all, it's really nice real estate. It's also protected from the elements with the protective cover. But the distance between the two headlights is maybe about the same as a hammerhead shark. And that gives you the accuracy that you were talking about, I think.
Yeah. No, it's probably farther. I would say that the distance between headlights, and you would know better than I, but maybe 1.3, 1.5 meters. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a, you know, if you put cameras in there powered by Nodar, that's going to give you highly accurate 3D point clouds out to, you know, 200, 300 meters.
Yeah. Really right. Great.
So yeah, you talked a lot about the technology, but I think if we could understand a little bit more about the future trends in terms of your cost, your performance versus LiDAR or radar, how do you see the growth of mobility taking place over the next 10 years and Nodar being a part of this growth?
Yeah, what's nice about what we're doing, or one of the things that's very nice, is it's available today. And so, you know, when you look at LiDAR, LiDAR is great because the accuracy of the measurements is fantastic. If you're getting a return photon, you know the distance to the object. The problem is, you know, even with these new silicon approaches, getting the light onto the silicon and off the silicon, and what laser are you using, and does it work in the automotive grade temperature ranges, and there are a lot of problems that haven't been solved, and then the resolution, you know, is just inherently much, much lower than a camera. So what we think is that, you know, we're coming into a period where ADAS systems are going to be on more and more cars, right? Mm-hmm. Almost all cars, probably by 2025, are going to have, you know, level two and above. And right. And those cars, so that's, you know, whatever, ADAS cars, I think in 2025, there will be at least 36 million of them made. Those cars are all going to have vision systems. And the price sensitivity in the passenger vehicle market is so high that it's hard for us to imagine LiDARs being kind of a mainstream solution. So ours is based on cameras, and those cameras can be integrated sort of in unique locations. And so we feel like we're really well suited to support kind of level two, level two plus, and level three for the next decade while LiDAR comes up to speed. And I will say that for levels four and five, which, you know, realistically, I think we're looking at 8 to 10 years out to see sort of the first real adoption of consumer level four and five and mainstream adoption of robo-taxis. So, but for that, yes, I think we'll have a sensor fusion situation. The cost on those vehicles is much higher. The bill of materials, there's room for a LiDAR or multiple LiDARs. But I still think the dominant sensors are going to be cameras. Dominant sensors, cameras, because, you know, of the millions and millions of pixels we just discussed, the area coverage rate, if you will. But also LiDAR as a backup center as well as radar. You know, radar will never be able to deliver a fully accurate 3D map. I don't think. So I think, you know, as radar improves, it will still be used as a backup sensor in addition to LiDAR, with cameras being dominant.
It's interesting because if you draw a Venn diagram of the OEMs that don't want LiDAR and the OEMs that do want LiDAR, cameras always inside that Venn. So you're safe, Brad.
Yeah, exactly. And here's the final trend, which is relevant. Yeah. Camera technology is going to get better, right? It's amazing right now. I mean, some could argue it's better than the human eye today, but it's only going to get better and it's only going to get cheaper because everything has cameras. Like, billions are shipped even this year, over a billion cameras will ship. So price curve going down, performance curve going up, you know, there's always going to be a place for cameras on the vehicle.
Yeah, I agree.
Cameras benefit from Moore's law,
right,
as well, with the cost and performance.
Right.
Great. So that's really cool. Thanks for sharing Hammerhead and the technology behind it. I'd like to know, what are you guys working on now and what's next for Nodar?
So right now, you know, like I said, the big innovation is being able to place the cameras in a wide stance. So we've sort of finished the core technology that enables that. Now, you know, there's a pipeline, basically, if you will, that starts with sort of the calibration piece, if you will, or outputting the disparity between the images and aligning them. And then there's the stereo matching piece, which then identifies points in each image and produces, you know, a depth map. Basically, for every pixel, you'll get X, Y, and Z, or, you know, the X and Y, and then the distance. So, you know, we're certainly expanding our intellectual property in those regions. And then you can imagine there's several layers above that, and the jury's still out on exactly where we'll play in that stack. But moving forward, we'll certainly leverage kind of the improving camera landscapes, so more megapixels each year, higher photo sensitivity, higher dynamic range, and then we'll move into improving, you know, nighttime performance and poor visibility performance and these types of things. So there's like an infinite number of things we can do, but at the core, we're just trying to kind of get this basic new type of vision system on cars.
Interesting. Yeah. So you mentioned the night vision. You can use this technology with infrared.
We can actually use it with infrared. And, you know, that's certainly something worth looking at. You know, I do believe that in the future, more and more cars will adopt infrared sensors or cameras. That said, you know, and I think Elon Musk is sort of famous for saying this, you know, if the human eye and the human can drive at night with headlights, then a camera-based system should be able to as well. And we agree with that. So,
because cameras are better than human eyes, right?
Cameras are as good or better, and they will be, you know, they're just getting better and better. So you guys know more than anybody, the headlight technology is getting better. So we'll benefit from any passive lighting source, mm-hmm. including headlights and street lamps and other cars. And there are tricks that can be done, as you know, with headlights to pulse width modulate the in unison with the camera to get up to a 3x improvement in range just with a standard camera.
That's really great. I think if I had to point out one potential weakness of cameras, it would be the night vision. So being able to solve that so the cameras can be used at night to support all the other cameras, it seems like every car is going to need cameras and more of them as they become more autonomous.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just a note that our system is not limited to forward looking. Of course, it can be mm-hmm. used for the side. Cameras can be placed vertically aligned rather than horizontally. It doesn't matter to us, and they can be used in the rear. So we have some projects going right now that are related to 360 degree vision.
Cool. So maybe in the taillights in addition to the headlights.
Exactly. You guys make taillights? Perfect.
We sure do.
We do, yeah. And also, I think we should point out that your technology is obviously not limited to mobility. You could provide this technology for smart infrastructure as well.
That's true. And we've talked to a few companies about, you know, things like traffic intersections and truck yards and these types of things where the sensor itself would be stationary, but the cameras would be separated, not affixed with a rigid beam.
Wow. Okay. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, so Brad, you're an accomplished entrepreneur in both business and engineering. And I think for people who want to follow in your footsteps, if you could share some advice to them, that would be very valuable.
Do you mean people with a technical background or just generally people who are interested in entrepreneurship?
Well, how about both? I think so. Somebody with a technical background who wants to get into camera technology and maybe a business-oriented person who might be interested in starting their own company in the field.
Yeah. Well, for a technical person, I mean, the first thing is I think you have to have kind of an aptitude for startups and for risk to go down the startup path, and you have to have a passion. So I know it's cliche, but I think whatever student I'm talking to, it's you know, you figure out what you really love because you know, you're going to be at it a long time, and your brain can be used for any number of things. So you might as well pick something that you love related to the technology and specifically kind of autonomous vehicles and cameras. The good news is these cars, I mean, you look at like Volkswagen, for instance, which has kind of proclaimed that it's becoming a software company, right? And that makes perfect sense because a lot of these functions are being brought into software. Like we are taking a hardware function and bringing it into software. And so there's a full stack of opportunity. And by the way, it's not just software. There's always going to be hardware, right? Mm-hmm. You've got to sit in a vehicle, and the vehicle needs to physically sense the environment. So my point is, you know, from the ground up, there's a full stack of opportunity. So you just need to figure out where your passion lies and understand that, you know, the earlier stage you go, the more risk there is, and you have to have a tolerance for that. But I also think kids coming out of school, in my opinion, benefit from taking jobs at larger companies first. I always tell business school students that, you know, the best job they could get, in my opinion, is a sales job, because leadership is really about sales, not just to customers, but selling to the board, selling up to your managers. And I think that's one of the key things to learn, because I meet so many kids that are trying to go out and start startups. And the one thing I have learned is that pattern recognition in the world of entrepreneurship is really, really important. It just reduces the number of mistakes you make. I cringe when I think about the first few startups I was at, and all the all-nighters we pulled just because we had no idea what to do.
So. Well, that's incredible advice. I think that was really good. Thank you for that.
No problem.
Would you like to leave the audience with any closing remarks?
Yeah, thank you, Amit. It was wonderful being included. I would like to say that if there are listeners who are passionate about automotive and autonomy, and believe as we do that this market is the place to be, we are hiring, and we're hiring in engineering and marketing right now. On the engineering side, if you're an algorithms type person with a PhD, or an embedded engineer, real-time engineer, and have some automotive experience, we would love to hear from you. You can email contact@nodarsensor.com. Thanks.
You heard it, guys. If you're looking for a job, you know where to go. Brad's got you. I really hope you enjoyed our podcast. And our next guest is Jim Adler, Founding Managing Director of Toyota AI Ventures. Thank you. Have a good rest of the month.